Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Welcome into hour number two here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and the Bills 16-player practice squad is set. And the names are as follows. Quarterback Shane Buechele, running back Frank Gore Jr., wide receivers Steven Gosnell, the undrafted rookie out of Virginia Tech, wide receiver Christian Wilkerson, tight end Kalecki Latu, offensive lineman Travis Clayton, Dan Feeney, and Kendrick Green. Defensive tackles Zion Logue and Jordan Phillips. Your linebackers are Jimmy Charlo and Keontae Jenkins. Your corners are Daquan Hardy and Dane Jackson. And your safeties are Jordan Poyer and Sam Franklin, who got released by the Panthers the other day. He is a special teams-focused safety and actually played under Chris Tabor down there in Carolina. So not surprising to see his name resurface. Now, I should mention this. One of the players on their 16-player practice squad is an international pathway player, Travis Clayton, who's from the UK. So I believe the Bills still have one open spot on the practice squad because of that.
There's a report out also that defensive end Andre Jones, who was waived by Washington on Tuesday, is going to go to the Buffalo's practice squad, and he's a defensive end, Andre Jones.
But so because,
we'll see if that happens.
Well,
actually,
they have a spot.
Right.
Because Clayton is one of the current 16, and he does not count towards your roster total being an international pathway player. So they got an extra spot there if they want to use it. And so if that report proves accurate, that's your 17th guy. So there you go. You feel free to chime in on that, but looks like the two – young linebackers are in the fold, as we had suspected. So that's good news. And when they only kept five, you knew they were going to have at least two on their practice squad just for injury depth purposes more than anything else.
Right.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to get on board. Would you have done anything different with the Bills' initial 53-man roster? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Those are the numbers to join us. We should also mention, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we will have Brandon Bean and his press conference as he addresses, obviously, the formation of the 53-man roster. I assume he'll be asked a couple of questions about the practice squad as well. So be sure to stay tuned for that, as we will carry it for you here live. So that's kind of where that sits. But you let us know if there was anything you might have done differently with the initial 53-man roster. I think I might have carried an extra linebacker and figured out the numbers somehow, some way, just because linebackers are a primary position you see serving on special teams, and you need those guys. So I don't know. I mean, because if you look at the five linebackers on the roster right now, okay, Joe Andreessen's on special teams. He's your backup, Mike. I'm assuming Dorian Williams is going to be on special teams. And perhaps even Shaq Thompson could be serving in some special teams capacities. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe not, being a veteran player. They did go heavy, you know, at defensive back, 11 players there. So they've got plenty of DBs to put out there on special teams.
I mean, you're not going to put, you know, Curtis Samuel's not going to play special teams. Shavers will.
Shavers
of
will.
Of course. Elijah Moore?
Maybe.
You know, maybe.
And you still have Codrington as your primary return man. Weren't surprised. We kind of read the tea leaves there on the last preseason game in terms of the return man competition. Once we saw Laviska Shenault out there in the second half playing at the end of the game, it was pretty obvious that Codrington was going to be the primary return man for this team.
I don't think it was Codrington that got Shenault cut. I think it was the receiver room that got Shenault cut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I could see that. I never felt like Joe Brady could find a proper role for him at the position number one.
I don't know if he could find a unique role for him.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I mean.
He's got multiple guys at what Chenault can do well. He's got big bodies.
Yeah.
And he's got gadget guys, you know?
Right. Samuel being a prime example. So
Shakir and Samuel's both.
Yeah. So that was working against him. And then he had a mental error in a coverage unit play at Tampa Bay. He did not keep outside contain. The return man got outside of him, and he's running up the sidelines out to midfield. So you can't have those, you know, right around roster cut time.
Right.
Just can't. So Brandon Codrington is your return man. And I'll say this about Codrington. And we talked about it on this show last year when he was a rookie return. Like last year at this time, the Bills had just executed a trade to acquire Brandon Codrington from the Jets.
Right.
And he waltzes in here with 120 returns under his belt in college and looks like a seasoned veteran out there in terms of his decision making. I can only think of one time that he didn't make the best decision trying to field a ball that was a little short in Indy, right, and he bobbled it. That was about it.
But I'll say this. Yeah, I've said it a ton. Decision-making is the most unique trait one of those guys can have. When you catch the kick and start to run, all these guys are phenomenal, right? They're made for it. They're all dynamite with the ball in their hands. But making decisions about when to catch it, when to let it drop, the whole thing, the decision-making is this difference maker. Yeah. And Codrington rarely misses. He's a really good decision maker, and that's why he's valuable.
Let's go to the phones and to Bobby in Buffalo. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
Listen, I want to answer the question in regards to what would I change about the 53-man roster?
Yeah.
First of all, number one, I would add another quarterback on there because the guy Shane Broussel, the guy that wears number six.
Right. Yeah.
Man, he had a monster game against Tampa. Okay. I would definitely add him on to the 53-man roster to back up Josh and Trubisky. Okay. I would definitely add him on, get him some reps and get him all prepped up. Okay. That's all I had today, guys. God all bless. Right. Have a good day.
Yeah. While I understand your affection for Shane Bouchel, Bobby, they can do all of the stuff you just said with where he sits right now, which is on the practice squad. He can get all the reps he wants. He'll run scout team during the week, and he'll be in all the meetings with the other two quarterbacks throughout the course of the year.
I would contend that the game that Shane Bouchel put together in Tampa Bay, I would argue, I don't know that I could bolster it, but he had the best preseason game of any player on the roster at any game in any time. He was the best player in the preseason for the Bills because of his game in Tampa Bay. Shavers was there. He produced all throughout camp, yeah. Other guys played, you know, Deion Walker flashed a couple of plays, but game in, game out from start to finish, Shane Bouchel was on it in Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
25 of 30 for 287 and a touchdown. Plus, he ran 52 yards on three attempts. I mean, the guy did everything you wanted a quarterback to do in that game. That's why he's here. Certainly, he doesn't have the arm Josh does and all of that, and you can go on and on and on. But in the game they gave him to play, he killed it.
Yeah. Yeah, he did really well.
Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Jope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
I think you agree that my Washington Nationals visor was the right choice today. 11-0 in the fifth. Wasn't even thinking about the fact that they were playing the Yankees at all. Just sort of a random choice. Did a podcast. Black shirt. I mean, there's a lot There's thought that goes into it, but it's usually not very good thought. It's just kind of wasted thought. Had a podcast this morning. Went with the green screen. I have a green screen, aren't I fancy? Really don't know exactly how best to use it. Put a picture of a sunset that I took behind it. That was going to be my backdrop. All very glitchy. Anyway, it was mostly like an orange backdrop. Didn't want... why did I even start here? The Nationals are down 11-0 in the fifth inning to the Yankees, and we may or may not keep you posted on that one. I just heard that Awaken 180 spot that I recorded just now, and I remember doing it. I can tell that that's the one that I did when my mouth was numb, because I'm just a little bit slower. Like the Novocaine was, I can hear it, you know, that's sort of like how the sound of your own voice maybe sounds weird to you, but everybody else is like, why would that be weird? But it's always like that way to yourself. Now I've gone into this. Sal coming up at 3:30, Steve Palazzolo today. That'll be cool. I want to talk to Brian Koziol, too, about the Ryder Cup team. That's an interesting one with Keegan Bradley, the captain of the team. I mean, everybody thinks playing well enough to deserve to be on the team, but he's the captain and he doesn't choose himself. And I think that that is an interesting conversation. So Jordan Poyer is back. This is obviously something I'll bring up with Sal. It's very much like when Trey White happened. And there have been others of these, right? Micah Hyde, was that even last year, where the Bills dip into their past for security. And it's easy to pick on them for that, right? Like 32 teams, all these options. Why do you have to go back into your own Rolodex? Has the show ever sounded older? Your own Rolodex for depth? I don't know. I think it makes sense. And they're not going to do it if they think Poyer is like useless physically, athletically. They've got to have some faith that he can play, you know, on a what? Maybe like on a replacement level, it would be. And the tiebreaker is that they know him and respect what he knows and what he can impart on younger players. So I guess it's okay. The other side of that coin, though, is Poyer and Trey White. I mean, Trey White was signed, and it was possible that he would start week one, and it still is. He would, for sure, if he weren't hurt, and we don't know exactly where that stands. I'll get into that in a minute. But the other side of the coin is like, well, on one hand, it's sort of logical, right? You've had good players that they know you know them. There's a safety in that, no pun intended, with Poyer. And so, okay. But if it weren't for, I think I want to say if it just weren't for Josh Allen, it would be these kind of things these are the kind of things that sort of make you nervous, right? Like, what kind of shape am I in at corner if I'm going into my past for Trey White? What kind of shape am I really in at safety if I'm doing this? What kind of shape am I in at wide receiver if I'm signing the, I don't know, 5 to 10 guys in the last 2 years the Bills have signed just sort of on the come, like sort of hoping that maybe you find something there and that really hasn't happened yet, unless I want to include Hollins. I mean, Hollins, I think you'd have to say worked out, but not like that there was much of a ceiling. So Allen, and you know, you don't have to look at it this way, but I think he makes it really hard in a objective way to get nervous for them. You know, he is your pill that you take if you have like a particular form of anxiety and sort of to calm you down. And Allen does that. Like, I want to really kind of investigate these kinds of moves, like Poyer. I mean, Poyer is just the practice squad, so like Micah Hyde was, who knows if it even means anything. But, you know, you've got a veteran leader type, even maybe a quasi-coach back in the fold, and that can be good on its own merits. But if not for Allen, I'd want to sort of probe this and be like, well, and you still can. It just, for me, only goes so far. Okay, well, how desperate are the times if I'm making these choices, these signings? But I can't, it goes both ways. Like, if the Bills When the Bills make a big move that everybody would consider positive, you know, the betting lines don't move. If it were a quarterback, they would. But Joey Bosa or even maybe Von Miller, I don't know for sure that there was no change to what their expectation or what the outside expectations were in terms of the, you know, the betting markets. But I doubt that there was. I don't think there's anything they can do. That's what I kind of came up with yesterday when thinking about the cuts and the roster. Like, nothing here is probably going to mean a lot, if anything. So, I mean, it's a little bit depressing. But if not for Allen, you might really wonder what this is going to look like. Bishop, Trey White, Hairston hurt. Maybe White is even hurt. What Brandon Bean said today leaves that up in the air, as far as we know out here, I would say. You know, Sal will have his own interpretation of the press conference, but rehabbing. So he's not fine. It wasn't something that was, you know, he didn't say like it was a scare or anything like that. He's not fine. And we're at the point on the calendar now where injuries can be secrets. Like a month ago, the Bills would have had, you know, if it's a possible like a 2-week injury or something like that, they might just tell you that. They could be more, you know, open about it. But now we're close enough to the opener, what, 11 days to the Bills opener, 8 to the season opener in the league, Dallas, Philadelphia, cannot wait, that they have reason to play it coy. And maybe that's what they're doing. I think you could have listened to Bean today and thought, you know, that was sort of a good report on White. I really didn't think that exactly, because, you know, rehabbing and he's trying, you know, these kinds of things. What really matters the most probably is that he wasn't put on IR, right? So we know that he doesn't have to miss 4 games. So that's good, I guess. Sal coming up at 3:30. If you want to get in on something on your mind Bills-wise, I'm here for it. We've obviously been in a lot of places over the long offseason. But whether it's – like this point for me is interesting on how – like when I say I can only go so far really scrutinizing these kinds of decisions, cut decisions or additions like Poyer today, I just don't – I don't think I can really build an argument that it's going to be that important to what happens. I know that that's kind of sacrilege in football because everything is described as important, but it's got to be relative. So I don't want to bring myself to a point where I feel like what is happening there is going to really hurt them. But you know, it could. And if it does, then what? Like if they cannot be trusted, if the Bills' secondary, as the season gets going, cannot be trusted, and Baltimore carves them up, then you go into week 2, and that's the Jets. And if the Jets, who are not expected to be good offensively, kind of are, we will be asking those questions. Will the Bills lose these games? I mean, they go Jets, Dolphins, Saints, Patriots at home, Atlanta, Carolina, after the Ravens. If Cole Bishop is mid and Trey White is even, you know, back healthy but not at his all-pro form, which I think is to be expected, what's my record, you know? I guess you can say, and this is right, that the point of this regular season is about finishing first in the conference. That is what the Bills have yet to accomplish. That is what might be the thing that gets them to the Super Bowl. One fewer game in the playoffs, home field, that of course is the easiest path. Kansas City got away with a very challenging season by getting to that one anyway. All those close wins, I mean, it drove us crazy, but that afforded them the bye, and then the Texans, and then, you know, they had to win the one game over the Bills, which they again did. So huge, huge advantage. Fantasy football, so it's coming up on Labor Day weekend. You might have drafts in and around tonight, this weekend. I've got, you know, shocking, I've got one tonight. And it's a way of, fantasy is a way to frame, you don't need fantasy for this, but it's a way to frame the big question again this year about the Bills' offense, which is who, after Allen, of course, excluding Allen, like who is the man if there's going to be one on their offense? And I thought I would share some of my observations and some of the data I've got on how fantasy players are answering that question about the Bills' offense. I went on with Pete Overzet this morning on his best ball stream, and I'm always, when I do that, identified as like being tight with the Bills. Like I'm not as tight as they might, as Pete might think, but just sort of, that's the team we talk about every day. So people in the chat are like, what's going to happen? And I had this last year too, and I made fun of myself for it because every time I would go on a fantasy stream, they would ask me this. And I was just absolutely punching blind. You know, I mean, the obvious, you have Coleman as a rookie. You have Kincaid in year two. You have Shakir, who's pretty good, but how high is the ceiling? I don't know, Mac Hollins. We had Chase Claypool last year. We had MVS last year. And as I'm filling that out, I mean, the hosts are like, cut his mic. This is ridiculous. How is Marquez Valdez-Scantling going to be the ticket from the Bills receiving core to a fantasy championship? And of course he was not. I mean, he might have had two catches or something and he was released. Obviously we know that wasn't the case, but nobody really was. There turned out to be no right answer. Shakir was fine. Shakir was a wide receiver three or four, even on a good fantasy team that may or may not have even started for you. He wasn't somebody that you like a guy like that in fantasy. You like a guy that gives you sort of the higher floor. He was safe, but you don't really get touchdowns. You didn't. Maybe that changes. You didn't really get touchdowns or like really big weeks from Khalil Shakir. I mean, what's the most logical, predictable outcome for him this year, assuming he's healthy, which I kind of am by week one, is the same kind of year where, I mean, does he explode for I just don't see much higher upside. He can't. Touchdowns are random. I mean, he could end up breaking a couple more tackles or being a target on a play from like the 12-yard line or something, and then you see that number. What would he even have? Maybe four? Was it even four? Like, see a number like that double. That can happen without any real change in philosophy. So that if that happens, that's good for you if you have him in fantasy. But his draft position is 83.6. on Underdog. So that is the end of the seventh round. Now in home leagues, if you're drafting with your friends, that probably will be higher, as in earlier, you know, especially if it's Bills fans. Shakir, we like him. Interesting that Keon Coleman, again, using all these are Underdog best ball rankings from a long offseason of drafts. Everything is, you know, up to date. Coleman is pick 88, which is only four picks, 4.4, technically, picks later than Shakir. Shakir is wide receiver 45 in the league in drafts, and Coleman is wide receiver 47. And I think they give you, this is a little, I'll be a little bit fantasy technical here, just quickly. I think they give you an opposite profile for this. If you're looking for stats. And Shakir gives you that safer, like I just described, that safer, you know, what's a regular game for Shakir? Like 5 for 70 or something like that? You know, that kind of a 12 PPR points a week. Whereas Coleman will have, you know, maybe a little bit stereotypical here, but Coleman should have bigger games and he should have smaller ones. I wonder just how bent they're going to be on getting Coleman to a place where like everybody is, nobody wants to question the pick anymore. They should want that for their offense anyway, but you know, selfishly, the Bills would want that for themselves. I mean, especially the GM for whatever part he has and how this plays out. He would want that for himself and with Kincaid. So Coleman is the guy that gives you, I think, the bigger, the spike weeks, you know? Whereas Shakir probably doesn't, but they go at around the same time in drafts. Josh Allen is pick 28, so that's pick 4 in the third round, and that's fine. That's really, and Lamar Jackson is right next to him. Jaden Daniels is close too. That's really a question of how you want to build your team. But you wouldn't want to pick Allen any earlier than the mid-second round because that's a little nuts. Early third, though, it's fine. Cook is the most interesting one to talk about, and we've done a lot of that with our many guests over the course of the summer. 39.8 for Cook, which is early fourth. And that is kind of the fantasy community sort of yawning at the season he just had. Yeah, lucky. Because, I mean, come on. 16 rushing touchdowns for a guy that doesn't even play half the snaps. You'd want to know that he's going to play a lot more. And that's what we don't know yet. And I'm not really expecting that. I don't think the contract dictates that. I wouldn't assume anything when it comes to that. But if you got pretty close even, if you got 1,000 yards again from Cook and half the touchdowns, you know, assuming a full season played, early fourth round in fantasy is fine. I mean, that's not going to hurt you. You might even take that. You want to get a little bit more than you get out of Cook as a receiver than what's been happening. And I don't know what to expect there. Like, he hasn't been that great at it. And the offense was so successful anyway last year. I just kind of lean toward they're not going to be anything significantly different, like philosophically. Cook had 32 catches in 16 games for 258 yards. So, I mean, 2 for 16 is the average per week. Shakir would be 5 for 54, by the way. I was guessing at him, was a little generous when it came to Shakir. So Cook early fourth. We did Shakir. We did Coleman. Then you have three more Bills guys I'll include here that go almost exactly at the same time in drafts, but three different positions. Kincaid, Palmer, and Ray Davis. And that's just, you know, what do you need? Kincaid is pick 131. So round 13, is that? End of the 10th, a little higher. End of the 10th would be 120. 11th round, late 11th round. And then early 12th for Palmer at 136. And just after Palmer is Davis at 138. Curious to know what the fan attitude is about Ray Davis this year. We spent so much time on Cook because of the contract stuff. And also because he had like a historic season for them, just what will happen next. He got his money and everything seems fine now. Will he play more like I just brought up? That remains to be seen. I'm not assuming he will. But, you know, Davis is somebody who, when he was needed on a team that, because of, you know, as proven by what Cook did, and with Allen and his prowess as a runner, is just almost like as much as good as you can hope for if you are a running back. The line was good and nobody ever got hurt. You know, you had consistently doable, you know, games where the running backs could get off last year. And in the one game that Cook missed, Davis did that. I mean, that was a game against the Jets. He had one big play that might have been on a reception, but still, he was well over 100 total yards in that game. You know, I think, like I said a lot last year about Cook, I think Cook is fine. I think Davis is fine too as a backup. Selfishly, just for curiosity's sake, as a talk show host, as a fantasy player, I was hoping the Bills would draft one of the sexier prospects even on day three at that position. That did not happen. They didn't touch it. And so they go into the season with the same three guys, Cook, Davis, and Ty Johnson. I didn't look up Ty Johnson. But we're just starting, really. We should be able to do that if you want. So just for some perspective on, you know, it's only fantasy football, I'll say it that way. But just like where does the market see our guys? And, you know, Shakir and Coleman our back end wide receiver fours, going by 12s for 12-team fantasy leagues, you know, guys that would be fourth or fifth receivers on normal teams. And then Kincaid just outside of the top 12 is tight end 13. Palmer at wide receiver 60, last of the wide receiver fives then is Palmer. One of our semi-regular guests, Mike Dempsey, was on maybe a month ago and said that Palmer was his most drafted player, which I thought was wild because I just do not see the volume there. I mean, he's cheaper than Coleman. You want from Palmer, in that case, almost expect from Coleman, like what I was laying out before, which is, you know, the occasional big game, but probably not. I would say this about Palmer, if not also Coleman, probably not someone you can trust in your lineup every week if you're managing your teams. So there you go. Sal's coming up. Brandon Bean spoke today. The Bills are practicing now. We'll get Sal's thoughts on the practice squad put together, the Poyer return, Trey White, and more. As I mentioned, Steve Palazzolo will be on at 4. That's exciting. Longtime PFF analyst. Check the mic with Sam Monson. I think Steve is probably somebody that I can ask about Poyer or Cole Bishop for some sort of analysis. It's not a fantasy show, Steve's. Really, it's probably my favorite football podcast that is not a fantasy podcast, is Steve and Sam.
Chris shows you examples of how efficient you should be. And I was like, you know what? In order for everything to kind of like time up better, I'm going to try to drop my arm a little bit and just slow down this process. And what that got me to do was, again, the disassociation to now, once I start my throw motion, get my foot in the ground quick, this is going and this is still coming around. Basically, like every rotational athlete, it's golfing, it's swinging a baseball bat of staying on that back foot, and it's this, right, where I wanted to throw everything and have this stay back as long as possible, and as it comes through, to be as snappy as possible. It's like a catapult almost. Everything is...
more like a trebuchet. Raising that, not a catapult, but is that how you say it? Trebuchet? You know the difference between the two?
No.
No?
No clue. A trebuchet?
Yeah.
No.
That's what most people are talking about when they're saying catapult.
Isn't the trebuchet the one that has like sort of two levers?
Yeah, and it whips.
One whips.
It throws things.
The catapult is just a singular plane. Yeah.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes, yeah, singular plane.
I'm glad my brain still works well enough to know.
Listen,
that.
Listen, the show's never sounded... I don't know, so smarter, maybe.
It's more scientific, maybe?
Yeah, that's Josh Allen. Good morning. Jeremy and Joe, Owen and Josh here as well. That's Josh Allen from January, the piece the Bills put out on working with Chris Hess, which we saw yesterday in Hard Knocks. They were breaking down his throwing motion and deep into it and 3D mapping. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you the snarky thought I had about that exact moment?
What's that?
As there's Allen and Trubisky and Mike White and Shane Buechele digging deep into their throwing motion with 3D cameras and everything, I thought somewhere Mark Schlereth cries about analytics. You know?
He hated that segment.
I know why he was playing football out there. Like, but look at the science they're putting into the best player in the NFL's throwing motion. And, of course, I would think the Bills are not the only team doing that. And if they are, or if there are teams out there not doing that, let's say you're a quarterback in the NFL and you watched that last night. First off, you probably have to be doing that or know that's happening. But wouldn't you look at that and say, well, Josh is doing that. I should be doing that.
Yeah.
I should be doing that.
I remember criticism of Cam Newton for never doing that, for never working on his motion. He had a weird hitch in it. And there probably are guys that would fight against that, right? Like, what do you mean? I gotta change the way I throw the football. I was amazing high school player. I was amazing in college. I made the National Football League, and now I'm a starter. And you want me to do what? You want me to change how I throw the football?
Yeah.
Like, I bet there would be individuals around the league that think that way.
There might be.
I don't know who they would be right now.
They might be against it because, you know, ego, or they might be against it because they think this job is already hard enough. Let me figure out the league first. Before I introduce, change the way you throw the ball.
Because I can't think of another starter in the league right now that I have heard. I mean, we're closer to the Bills, so maybe if I was covering the Texans, I would hear about Stroud doing it. But I don't know of another quarterback in the league that has, like, rehauled their throwing motion, like Josh has.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us, Jeremy and Joe. Have a poll up about the receivers now that Tyrell Shavers has made the initial 53-man roster, which I hope we get that on next week's Hard Knocks. It'd be nice to see.
I bet, yeah, that's going to be cut down day central next week's episode.
You would think. Or
because it wasn't really in this one.
No, it was just the stress of the cuts and guys that are hoping to make the team.
Yeah.
And whoever comes back on the practice squad. So that part of it might be next week. But the positive story, the most dramatic who's going to make the team, it really might be just Shavers. Mm-hmm. Who else is a surprise? Anybody?
Not really. It was kind of
chalk. Yeah, the draft picks made it.
Yeah.
Now, they have decisions to make once Max Hairston and Tylan Grable come off IR. They're designated to return. Now, other injuries, of course, could create spots. But if they're fully healthy, four guys have to come off the roster
right.
to make room for Hairston, Grable, and Hoyt and Ogunjobi. And the most interesting thing that happens, I mean, maybe they don't keep six receivers. It doesn't have to be a defensive end comes back and a defensive end leaves.
Yeah.
It could be a defensive end comes back and a receiver leaves. That could be Shavers. That could be Elijah Moore. You never know. So the roster will still have some tweaks, of course. But on the receiver, I posted this at Twitter. You can vote in this Twitter poll if you'd like. After all that, how's everybody feel about the receiver group? You have six. They've added three receivers that were not on the team last year. Josh Palmer, Elijah Moore, and Shavers making the roster. Like, sure, he was on the practice squad, but they have another body. So they've added three right. receivers. I'm counting Shavers for this.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the receivers group? Your options at Twitter. Great, fine, because Josh, obviously, it's rough. Or you can also vote, why are we talking wide receiver, if you want to. So how do you feel about it?
I feel fine because of Josh, mostly.
It's hard not to vote fine because of Josh. Fine because of Josh.
I do feel fine in general. Like, even separate from Josh. Like, I don't think they have a top Mike Clay ranked all the position groups in the league the other day, and he had the Bills 22nd at wide receiver. Like, I think it's about fair for them. Like,
yeah,
I think they're too. The worst group in the league. I don't think they're also near the top. They're probably a little bit below average as an overall group.
I don't think the tight end changes that either.
No,
not for
me. I think
if you go skill positions, wide receiver, tight end, they probably rank 20th.
Right. There is no, oh, but you guys forgot about Dalton Kincaid. Yeah. Oh, really? I forgot about a tight end who had 400 yards last season two touchdowns? Like, no, I didn't.
Right,
like,
he's going to have to prove that.
If he proves it in a year, you could say that.
I do think if you include running backs, you drift up to maybe, whatever, top half of the league. Because the Bills use their backs and use them well. So
right.
If you're ranking just receivers, just tight ends, just backs, like any combination of them, I think the best you can get to is about, you know, a little above average as an entire group. And, of course, Allen takes them, you know, much higher.
But there is nobody on this receiving core that I think a defensive coordinator should be afraid of right now.
Not yet.
Nobody. I mean, you would like to believe that Coleman could develop into that or that Palmer can be a difference maker compared to what he was with the Chargers. So there's potential for someone to become that, but it doesn't have to happen. I mean, there are question marks. There are question marks about every single receiver that isn't named Khalil Shakir. And I could even say him just at the beginning of the year because he's got an ankle injury. Like when they line up against the Ravens in 8 days, what do I know I have? I don't know what I have in Coleman. Not yet. I know I have a role player, but I don't know how good he is. I don't know what Palmer looks like in this offense. Does it have to be better than it was with the Chargers? He didn't have, you know, Gardner Minshew throwing him the ball. It was Justin Herbert. What do I have in Shakir in week one with an ankle injury? I don't know how healthy he'll be. And then Samuel with his injuries and Moore being in a different offense and not really popping off in camp or preseason. Like, every single player at that position has a question mark going into the Ravens game. Every single player.
Yeah.
So I feel fine. I don't feel terrible about it. I think if you told me, hey, the Bills are not going to add a number one receiver this offseason, I feel like they've actually ended up about as good as I could hope. Palmer's a fine addition, and I liked the Elijah Moore signing. And Shavers had a great camp. So really, what did I want them to do this summer other than trade for Terry McLaurin or DK Metcalf?
Yeah, it's important to note that this time last year that we were talking about MVS.
MVS
being a part of their team.
I feel way better about what they have now than MVS. And was there another one of those guys that made the team last year, or was it just MVS? Claypool didn't make the team.
Claypool didn't make the team. It was MVS. It was Mac Hollins. We didn't know what Mac Hollins was going to do.
Right, and then
he had a nice kind of surprise season. The one thing about Coleman and, you know, ceiling, what you expect from him, what you get from him, we'll see. I wonder if he starts to get good enough to get more attention. Mm-hmm. Because Deion Dawkins has been raving about Coleman. Like, he's a different player this year. The league better get ready. And if he's a lot better, he'll draw some double teams. He'll draw where corners want protection. And that's something that did not happen last year. Coleman was singled up as much as any receiver in football. Like, last year,
right,
part of the story was that, sure, he had his nice moments against – I mean, he won. He won routes. He was great after the catch. And if he does a lot of that, that's a story in the NFL altogether for every player. You get a lot better, then it becomes, okay, now defensive coordinators – is what you were talking about, do have to worry about you. And
mm-hmm.
do they have an answer for you, and do you have an answer for that, right? If he's good enough to draw more attention, you know, that opens things up for other guys. Everybody eats, and they can be in good shape. 803-0550. Joe in Pittsburgh before the break. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Very good.
I was wondering about your thoughts on Beanie Bishop. The Steelers just cut him. I live in the Pittsburgh area. All my buddies are kind of ticked off that he was cut by the Steelers, them being Steelers fans.
Mm-hmm.
With the uncertainty at the position, just wanted to hear your thoughts on Beanie Bishop, who he had like 5 or 6 picks last year. He started for the Steelers. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, he had 4 picks last year. He was a 4th-round pick, I feel like. I remember him being – because he was a guy I remember talking about before last draft – for a moment, but I have no idea why he got cut. I mean, he's really little. So is he a nickel guy? Is he an outside guy? I'm not familiar enough with the player. But there will be guys like that around the league. I mean, they're apparently signing a safety from San Francisco.
The Panthers, right?
Or from Carolina. He was at another camp, didn't make the team. That's Sam Franklin. Yep. So, like, he's for special teams, but it's like what you were saying. Like, he takes somebody's spot on the roster if he's being signed to the 53 man.
I don't think he's on the 53. I think he's
going to
practice squad. Yep. Jimmy Charlo will be practice squad. We saw a little more of him on Hard Knocks last night. Yeah. Thanks, Joe, for the phone call. I remember the name Beanie Bishop, but I can't say I know enough about him and why it didn't work in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got some good corners, right? Jalen Ramsey.
Pittsburgh. Yeah. Ramsey's maybe playing in the
safety or slot.
Yeah, I was going to say, he might play in the nickel. They were doing that with him in the preseason a little bit as like a big nickel corner.
Okay.
That Franklin report did not include him going to the practice squad. So maybe he does end up doing that. But he's played like 70%+ special team snaps every year under this coordinator. So I think there might be a chance he's on the 53-man.
Hour number 2 here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday.
There you go. Now you sound a little better.
A little bit better. Again, it's just like, I was like, ooh, we got something here. It's a little spicy. I'm a little irritated. Oh, and it's gone. It's gone. I'm on edge, Derek. I'm on edge.
You got your Tums in your Tums?
No.
Your Tums in your Tum-Tum?
No, I am just riding this out. I am completely
metaphorically.
On edge. Oh, yeah.
Metaphorically, your Tums have settled into your Tum-Tum. You're good to go now.
I guess.
Like, you gave it a little bit more of the good morning, you know? Like,
I did. Saturday's just going to be a wreck for me. The longer this week goes on, I am just on edge.
For those that don't know, Zach is a huge Texas fan, and the Longhorns are taking on Ohio State. And just to add more misery to misery, he has a fantasy football draft that night, too.
Oh, that afternoon. It's in the middle of the game.
It's in the middle of the game.
So
it's all in the same time period.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to end up like taking Brian Robinson instead of Bijan, like that one guy on the video that circulated.
That's right.
You're going to be like so not focused. You're going to be like, did Arch throw his second touchdown pass or not? Come on. Like, oh, it's my turn to pick? Yeah, whatever, this guy. And the next thing you know, you have Gabe Davis.
Gabe Davis. I'm drafting Steve Young. I've been watching the Cowboys documentary.
It's got to be a selectable player, though. Like, that's the
thing. Oh, that's right.
So I got to keep it somewhat relevant here.
Yeah, that's right. That's where we're hitting Jalen Reagor then.
Yeah.
Jalen Rager's on the mind. He's going on the board. We're going to throw a Ryan Wingo in there. Not even in the NFL
yet. Can't run a route. His routes are terrible.
Oh,
Paul Allen's a gem.
803-0550, the number two call. Speaking of the Vikings, Paul Allen.
Yeah, there you go.
Another one of those teams that had their reunions on that. Adam Thielen, that felt like a reunion we all knew was coming.
We all knew it was coming, but also I didn't expect them to have to trade as much as they did to do that.
A fourth and 20, 27, I believe, and then a fifth and 26.
But Carolina probably also knew. Minnesota probably wanted him. Therefore, let's just make sure that we hold on and see what kind of value we get.
Their wide receiver room.
Their wide receiver room.
Carolina's.
Interesting, though.
It's young.
It's very young.
McMillan
very
is 22
green.
And a rookie. Leggett, 24 in his second year. Jalen Coker, 23. Jimmy Horn Jr. is a rookie, 22.
And Jalen Coker's emergence is why they even thought to be able to dish Thielen in the first place. But now for Minnesota, though, this is a big deal in a different sense. I do still want to make fun of the fact that everyone's playing reunion tour right now.
Mm-hmm. It is fun.
So it is funny. I do need to make that. I can't be hard on the Bills and then also go, oh, it's perfectly fine that the Vikings traded for a 35-year-old receiver.
They should bring back Leotis McKelvin. Just bring him back. They need help at corner and return.
803-0550. Who else are the Bills adding to the practice squad?
Leotis.
Kidding.
Get him in.
Kidding.
What's Bruce up to?
But I will say, in a different sense, maybe even in the same sense, as to why the Bills brought Poyer back, Thielen going to Minnesota for a young J.J. McCarthy who's effectively a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Thielen's cooked, it's not the worst thing in the world, question mark?
Well, it's not the worst thing because you've got the Jordan Addison suspension, first three games, mm-hmm. and then you had Jalen Naylor go out for a second straight year with a season-ending knee injury. I mean, I talk about depth being tested.
Oh, so they actually just need depth at wide receiver.
No, I mean, that's where I talked about them for a while. It's like a potential Curtis Samuel type trade is because they may need to add somebody. And you mentioned it, J.J. McCarthy, rookie year, effectively. They're going to have to know early if he's got it. And it kind of sucks that, you know, Addison might be one of the best number twos in the league along with Justin Jefferson. They have T.J. Hockenson. But you want to put him in the best situation possible. I don't know their schedule in and out, so I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a grind for them early, but they got to find it out early. But that's your depth being tested right there, both suspensions and injuries. Thielen, I just get worried. I know he had a good end of last year. He's 35, though.
That's where I want to get to, and we
talk wide receivers hitting a wall at 30, Terry McLaurin. I get he's cheap, don't get me wrong. But that wall's going to hit you out of nowhere. And 35 for a receiver feels like it's not out of nowhere. And you kind of know what's coming.
And now, though, you just hope you get a couple weeks out of it so that you get Addison back and you're good to go.
And you roll from there.
And you roll from there. That's probably what their basis of thinking is on this one. I don't know. Maybe it's a different basis of thinking. I don't know. But, yes, I don't love the idea of paying an asset for someone that is probably not going to be a season-long investment for you. If that.
No, but for Carolina, though, for a team.
Good for them. Good business.
Yeah, I don't want to say that they're, totally talent deficient. Because I kind of like some of the young guys they have.
I'm intrigued by the Panthers this year. I really am.
I think especially because if Bryce Young takes a step forward. But for them to get a fourth and a fifth this year and a fourth for next year, that's where if you hit, we talk about it with the Bills all the time. That's where they build out their roster. It's where they get some of their surprising players is later on in the draft. And I'm not saying it's going to be necessarily the exact same for Carolina. But do they maybe get a starting right tackle in the fourth or starting cornerback in the fourth, something like that? I mean, that could really help them out. And you do it trading a 35-year-old wide receiver. It's pretty darn good business. Although I will say, and I saw a tweet from Ali Conley who talked about this, Thielen, though, was the only receiver on the roster that Bryce Young had genuine chemistry with, and that might be a problem. But the early signs from Tet McMillan is that might develop very, very quickly. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go back to the phones. Rich is up next. Rich, how are we doing?
Not bad, guys, not bad. You know, going with Poyer, yeah, scary. You know, can he keep up physically? Does he have the speed to keep up? I mean, as far as Miami, it had to be weird not playing along Hyde. It had to be weird playing in Miami when you're a Bill,
Yeah.
Did that impact his play last year? I mean, he knows Buffalo's defense. And you know, Hamlin, he's weak. You know, thank God he recovered from his injury, but he's not a starting safety. He's not. I don't know. I don't know what else is out there. just thinking outside the box and wondering if obviously they had to physically test Poyer before they sign him to make sure to see how much can he keep up with him.
Right.
Guy getting past him. I don't know. God help us. I don't want to get beat in 13 seconds because someone gets past the deep guy again.
Yeah, Rich, I get that. I will say he is on the practice squad. He's not going to be on the 53-man roster, at least to start. That is the report, is that he's going to be signing with the practice squad. I will say in terms of, it had to have been weird playing with Miami. I've mentioned it. I've been watching the America's Team, the gambler and his quarterback. It's about the 90s Cowboys. I think it's legitimately a really good documentary. I do recommend it to anyone, even if you're a Bills fan. The Bills do play heavily in one of the episodes. Jim Kelly's interviewed and stuff like that. It really, really well done. But, funny that the caller mentions, it had to have been weird playing for a division rival. The last episode I just watched, it's essentially about the ending. Michael Irvin's career-ending neck injury, Troy Aikman retiring, a lot of it due to concussions. But the last of the triplets is Emmitt Smith, and he goes on to Arizona. And in his first year, they come back to Dallas. They come back to Texas Stadium. And Emmitt talks about how he walked into that locker room, or walked into Texas Stadium and walked into the away locker room for the first time and broke down in tears. Cause this is not where I belong. This is not how this is supposed to go. So he finished out his contract. It was 2 years with Arizona and then signed a day contract with Dallas and retired. He's like, I can't separate football and the Dallas Cowboys. I can't just keep playing the game. And I'm not saying Poyer had, the same reaction, but maybe he did. He only signed a 1 year contract. I mean, he wasn't particularly good as well. He's 34. The speed is gone. He is here on the practice squad. But it's interesting that Rich brings that up, and I just watched something on that with Emmitt Smith talking about it and how he thought he could separate football and the Cowboys and just go on, play the rest of his career, rise higher in the all-time rushing leaders, and he really couldn't. He finished up his two-year contract and was done. And he realized it during his first year when he went back to Texas Stadium. He could not do this anymore, not on the Cowboys, not with his guys.
And the other interesting part that call did, though, was – you do have to pass some sort of physical in order to make the practice squad, right? Because
yeah, it's not necessarily testing his speed. It's just more, can you pass an NFL physical?
But also, they never signed Gabe Davis.
I don't think – I have no insider information. I don't think Gabe Davis is healthy. I think that's the biggest issue, is that he's still not healthy.
That's probably where we're sitting at with that is
– Pittsburgh just cut Robert Woods as well, and they didn't sign Gabe Davis. They have no answer at number two wide receiver.
Bill, sign Robert Woods.
Oh, boy. I like Bobby Woods when he was here. In all seriousness, I do. I really liked Robert Woods when he was here.
When he was a Bill, it was awesome. When he was a Ram, he was awesome. And then the injury happens, actually, and the injury happens, and he's obviously not the same at that point anymore. I just think that just to play in the meme right now of the Bills going back to the well, yes, bring back Bobby Trees. I'm kidding.
But yeah, on the Gabe Davis thing, I think it is Gabe Davis.
But that's what I just thought of that during that call, too, of – you bring up the fact that it was a different locker room, and I bring in, they kicked the tires on Gabe Davis.
Mm-hmm.
That man didn't sign here. And there is a central message to going back to the well, and again, we're seeing tons of teams doing it right now. So maybe it's not as hyper-focused as it should be. But I also don't love the fact that they have to keep going back to the well overall, even if it's for a practice squad signings, like Jordan Phillips even. Mm-hmm. I don't like the fact that that is something that may still need to happen with this team. And how deep is a roster really? Injuries, you mm-hmm. want to make sure of that. You mentioned the college roster size versus a pro roster size. It is funny, though, to see that Phillips is here for, what, the sixth time?
I think it's only four. Still a lot. It's still a lot.
A good amount of time. And yet, it should have gotten the same reaction, I guess, is what I want to say about that. But it's because people are more scared about Cole Bishop
mm-hmm.
that reaction becomes a little bit more heated.
He's an entirely unknown player.
Right. And it's because of the fact that he's not relatively known. Even though the last time I saw him, he looked fast. And that's exactly what I wanted out of him. I didn't need him to look good. I needed him to look fast. And he was both. And yeah, it's against backups for Tampa Bay. I understand that. But when the Bears were playing their starters, was it really that much on a different level?
Well, for me, I look at it because I mentioned it with Deion Walker.
you know, a positive you can take from preseason is, do my starters look like they don't belong with backups? Michael Hoyt. It's right. Why, like, I've started talking about him more. He looked really good in the preseason because he looked like he didn't belong with backups. He looks like, yeah, after his suspension, he will be a focal point of their defensive line. Deion Walker was sort of the same thing. That against backups, it looked like a man amongst boys
at times.
He was
bullying them, yeah.
He looked like a backyard bully.
And Bishop had plays like that in that game as well. Like, I don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and especially with that coming 1 week after, oh God, what are we doing at safety? But the problem with that is also, oh God, what are we doing at safety? Was still only 2 weeks ago. It's
mm-hmm.
fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh God, what are we doing at safety? What do you mean we just signed Poyer? Like, that suddenly becomes the answer to your fearful question.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, and to be perfectly honest, it's not somebody. Because if he did sign to the 53, I think there's also the wondering of, well, why wasn't it Justin Simmons? Who's right? A name that's been thrown around a lot. Now, again, of course, we do now have the reports. It's a practice squad signing. But at the time, that's where you do get into
that
they're addicted to going back to the well. Why do they keep doing it? You could have gotten this guy and that guy and what have you. Again, ultimately, it's a practice squad signing. There's a really good chance he's kind of just here because of the expanded practice squad as a mentorship role to the young guys. That also does not necessarily mean that Bishop is not picking things up and needs another mentor. It could just be it's another good guy to have in the locker room.
He might Trey just White be back for the vibes.
Yeah, could just be that. He wants to retire a Bill. They've got a spot on the roster. Why not? You know, Trey White, another thing for him has also been he might be a really good mentor for some of the young corners. Obviously, Max Harrison being one of them, but Dorian Strong's another. Even Jordan Hancock, Hancock might also be another kind of key piece of this. Sal has him listed at safety in his breakdown of the 53-man roster. Doesn't have to necessarily just be Cole Bishop that needs a mentor.
And it will be also, it does help though in Trey White's case,
mm-hmm.
though, he was holding his own in a competition to start camp.
Yeah.
Which is also a promising thing. Jordan Poyer can come back on the field and suddenly have a step back. Like, he can regain one of those steps back. And it's like, okay, cool. I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, I
got the end of the Bills season where he played through 13 injuries probably. And then in Miami where he just looks a step behind. Is it fun to think about that? Yeah, there's a small part of my brain that'd mm-hmm. be like, yeah, maybe it was Miami.
Yeah, it'd be storybook. And then, yeah, of course, you'd have like the extra bonus of like, it's just Miami's defense.
Just laugh at Miami.
But he's also 34 and has dealt with a lot of injuries in his career. And he wasn't necessarily the first-round athlete kind of deal either.
That last year in Buffalo, he fought through it. He was put through the gamut.
Was that the year he drove to Kansas City because of an injury? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, he was really – it was the tenacity of his that – kept things together because Hyde was no longer in the lineup. Remember.
Yep.
It was Poyer. And if Poyer missed a game, they would lose. That's what happened.
Mm-hmm. That's been a thing about their safety room, too, is it's been a few years now where they're just not able to have the consistent play, whether it be the end of Poyer and Hyde, injuries, and guys just not being able to be there, and now – these last 2 years, we're going into year two, but last mm-hmm. year it was, okay, Rapp, we're sort of finding out, well, he could be a starter, is not necessarily the perfect heir apparent that maybe you thought he was when he first came up from the Rams. Hamlin is, at best, quality depth, but depth you don't necessarily want to go to. Wonderful story, you're happy for him, but not necessarily the depth you want to go to. They've tried replacing him, I'd argue, twice with Edwards and Forrest, and that's where I should have brought that up at the last call that brought that up. Look, it's somewhat commendable that they have tried to replace it. It is also something, though, that in those attempts to replace it, the guys couldn't even make the 53-man roster. It wasn't just that they're okay, but we can do better. It was they literally didn't even get on the Bills opening day roster in both Mike Edwards and Derek Forrest. And that is a miss.
That is a miss.
Just flat out, that's a miss.
If you're trying to find depth that can challenge DeMar Hamlin and it's not getting that done, and Hamlin is a fine backup,
mm-hmm.
but he's a replacement-level player. And you're having a problem replacing a replacement-level player.
It's one of those things like Jamarcus Ingram. Has his game in Miami last year. Two interceptions, one's a pick six. Looks incredible. He's got to play 17 games.
It's going to
very quickly, you're going to have people going, he sucks.
It's going to end up a different story.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely.
Yeah, with Hamlin, he's got to play one or two games due to injury. Can make plays for you. Replacement level, he's good. He's an NFL player. He's got to play 17 games for you.
it's an entirely different story. It's the same with backup quarterbacks. A backup quarterback can have a good game or two. They play 17, it's a different story.
There's a difference between playing 12 snaps and 12 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. We go back to the phones. Mike's with us next. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
Something really hit the head. I was listening to the afternoon show yesterday, and there was a caller that called in, you know, said was talking about 13 seconds, and you know, a lot of frustration from the fan base. That's where that comes from, right? And just of us not having success getting to the Super Bowl the last couple of years. So we can be kind of hard on Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. So I'm trying to take a positive outlook, right? Jordan Boyer, it's not ideal. Our secondary is. When I initially look at it, I think it's cooked. But, you know, we're not seeing what Sean McDermott's seeing in practice, right? And he keeps saying it's not a lot of confidence in him right now. So I don't necessarily know if it's good us seeing Jordan Poyer play on the field. But there's a lot of complex at the safety position out of Sean McDermott's defense. So, look, I'm looking at two ways. Do I want to see Jordan Poyer on the field? No. But at the same time, I just don't know if Cole is just not really understanding what Sean McDermott and them want him to do as a player. I'm kind of stuck in the middle. I want to stay positive. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I'm where I'm at it with a lot of the fan base is like, we don't have much time left, right? Like Josh Williams in this window and we got to go. So I'm trying to have like a positive outlook on this. But at the same time, like, the room for error, the seat's getting hot, man.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you, man. Thanks for the call. I hate taking this route because it comes off as, I guess, a little entitled. Like, I am running out of patience. I want them to stay the course, but I am running out of patience. And the thing that burns this offseason, I've joked, it's been boring, right? I mean, for the most part, like even their Holden was relatively boring. James Cook, it was the least contentious of all of them.
Yeah, it was a Holden, but it was also, we all know where it's going to go at the end of the day, which is James Cook's going to play game one. What we didn't see coming was that an actual extension was done.
Right. And so for me, like with this season or this offseason, what's been frustrating is they nailed, it seems like, I should preface that, we don't know for sure. It seems like they nailed adding to the defensive line. Deion Walker and TJ Sanders look like they've been great hits. Awesome. That works. Your linebacker room. We haven't been able to really talk about Matt Milano looking back, very much back, with Terrell Bernard. We have not seen those two play together for more than like three games in a year. That could be really exciting. But where do they spend their first round pick? They knew they needed a corner too. They go get Maxwell Harrison. Fantastic. He picks up an injury right away. And it's an LCL sprain that's going to keep him out for a while. And then you look to the secondary room, or you look to the safety room, excuse me. Safety, we're still kind of unsure. Let's see about Cole Bishop. Okay, like he's starting camp off good. Like he's there. Like my big thing before camp was I need to know he's starting safety day one or they've got a problem. He's starting safety day one, and then he picks up an injury. And so it's two of the areas that you knew you needed to be better at that are the biggest question marks going into week one.
And yet easily. At the same time, what can you change in that is also the problem. What can you change? Because the thing is, you made the pick, you addressed the need.
Mm-hmm.
And the player picks up an injury, a thing that you don't get to look into and look out for. Otherwise, then you're spending too many assets on the same position.
Yeah.
The luck part of it really does have something to do with it because it's also the only time that the Bills have brought in with this regime a defensive end and a pass rusher that actually would have been able to make a difference. The big-time pass rusher, Von Miller, everyone still thought that it might have been for too much money, but you paid for the all-in push. And through the first half of that first season, he looks the part.
Yeah, very much looks the
part. And then the variable that you cannot account for happens. Luck. And then it becomes an albatross. But that's the first time I saw this regime even land a defensive end that can make an impact.
You hope now Rousseau is taking that step that he's
going to be
the guy.
And you hope that Bosa can be that for a year as well.
But you're right. Like outside of Von Miller, it's been a lot of they missed again there. They missed again. You know, this guy's okay. Epinesa.
Back-to-back years of Epinesa and Basham.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's, for me, it's, that's where it burns, is that at times they've nailed it, at times they haven't. They have not been able to completely come together.
And some of the variables, though, are bad injury luck.
Mm-hmm. Where, and to be fair, this year going to camp, it actually felt like maybe it was this year. Going into camp, the worry was, did they get enough wide receivers? It really wasn't even about cornerback or safety. Because if Bishop was starting, okay, that's, they're going to roll with him and wrap. Great. Corner, it's going to be maybe Max Harrison, but Trey White looks really good in camp. That's not a problem to have then. Great. But now at the end of camp, because of injuries picked up during the practice portion, the actual getting ready for the season portion, it may hamstring them, though. But I will say, and the positive for me, they're as good as you can take them to the bank. They're going to win at least 11 games this year. They will probably win the AFC East quite comfortably. I care how they look in December and January. If that means Cole Bishop struggles a little bit in the first few weeks, maybe gets beat up a little bit in Baltimore, but ultimately by November, he's really figured it out. Max Harrison's ready to go by November, December. Then so be it.
It is the interesting double-edged sword of saying that you're running out of patience, but also indirectly preaching patience.
Well, I'm running out of patience in the postseason.
Right.
And this is where I
that's where it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
You are running out of patience, but you're also kind of also preaching it.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing that you're like it.
I have become the fan. I have to remind myself constantly to enjoy the regular season.
I will say.
I have to constantly remind myself.
It's not saying you want to have your cake and eat it too. So I'm not like, pooping on the strategy here for you. It's more or less, it's something that we might actually need to do. It's a fine balance. Like, yes, you can be allowed to be running out of patience. But also at the start of this season, there might need to be some patience, which is weird. It is weird.
It's for me, it's just like I said, like there is, you can take them to the bank. They're going to be fine in the regular season. They may not get the one seed, and that's its own frustration, but they'll be in the dance. And they'll probably win a wild card game no matter what.
Yep.
It comes down to the divisional round of the conference championship. That's where, like, for me, the patience has run thin. And that's where the last few years, the one seed has hurt them with injuries, or they just don't come in a good spot, whether it be to off the field or on the field issues. It's just, like, that's where I'm running out of patience. The regular season for them should be what the Patriots used it for years, or at least the first 4 weeks, which is, that's effectively our preseason. That's where our starters are figuring it out.
Would you like to sign up for your trial of WinRAR?